Welcome to episode 1467 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In the previous episode, Andrew told us how his life with Jesus began. A fisherman from Bethsaida and the younger brother of Simon Peter, Andrew had learned early not to compete for the center of attention, but to notice what others missed and make himself useful in quieter ways. That disposition led him first to John the Baptist, and then, one afternoon by the Jordan, to Jesus. After hearing Jesus ask, "What are you seeking?" and spending the rest of the day with him, Andrew became convinced that he had found the Messiah, and his first instinct was to go find someone else. He brought his brother to Jesus and stepped back. Acts of the Apostles, Part 4, Chapter 2.
There is a boy in this story that I want you to remember. You may have heard the account of the feeding of the 5,000, the 5 loaves of bread and the 2 fish, and the 12 baskets left over. It is the only miracle that appears in all 4 Gospels, which tells you something about how significant it was. The crowd, the impossible arithmetic, the abundance from nothing, what the accounts, besides the one written by my friend John, do not mention, and what gets lost in the larger story, is the boy. A child, somewhere in that crowd of thousands, who had packed a lunch. Small barley loaves and sardines. This was the food of a poor family. It was not much. It was the kind of meal you bring when you cannot afford more. I noticed him. And were liabitation, I brought him to Jesus. Years later, when Simon and I were visiting with John, after he had written his account of our time with Jesus, we talked about what I did. John laughed and said, "That is the most Andrew thing in the entire gospel record."
Who is this man?
He might very well be the Messiah.
Andrew thought John was the Messiah, and there have been a dozen others beside him.
I know Andrew has desperately been searching for the one who could liberate us. Still, against all odds, it seems that he has found him.
So, you're just going to drop everything and go and follow him?
Simon, we're leaving. Aren't you coming?
It seems I am.
Let me tell you what the 3 years were like from where I was standing. I was not Simon, whom Jesus renamed Peter. I was not in the inner circle of three. That was Peter and James and John, the ones who went up the mountain at the Transfiguration, the ones who went further into Gethsemane. I was one of the 12, which was its own extraordinary thing, but within the 12, there were gradations of proximity that anyone present could feel even if no one spoke them aloud. I do not say this as a complaint. I say it because it is the truth, and because the truth of my particular position matters for understanding what I actually did, and what I was actually for. What I was for, I came to understand, was this. I was the one who brought people to Jesus. Not in the large dramatic sense that Peter brought thousands at Pentecost. One at a time. A person here, a person there. Someone who was on the edges of the crowd, and needed someone to notice them and walk them forward. Simon, we have found the Messiah. That was the pattern, established on the first evening. It never really changed. I found people. I brought them. I stepped back. In the economy of the kingdom, and I mean this precisely, not as a pious platitude. The finding and bringing is not less important than what happens after. It is, in fact, the hinge. Nothing that followed for Simon could have followed without the words I spoke to him on that first evening. The feeding of the 5,000 people could have happened in the way it did without a boy that nobody else was paying attention to. The hinge is invisible when the door is open, but without the hinge the door does not open. It was late in the day on the far shore of the lake. Jesus had been teaching for hours, and the crowd was enormous. 5,000 men, the Gospels say, and that count does not include women and children, so the real number was larger. Evening was coming and they were far from any town and people were hungry. Philip, who was from Bethsaida like me, was near Jesus when the question came, "Where are we to buy bread, so that these people may eat?" Philip did the arithmetic quickly. 200 denarii would not be enough, a laborer's wage for 8 months, and still not enough. I had been moving through the crowd. This was something I did. While others stayed near Jesus, I would move, because movement is how you notice things, and I noticed things by being in motion. And I had seen a boy. He was not doing anything remarkable. He was simply sitting there with a cloth bundle, the way children sit at the edge of adult gatherings, present but not quite integrated. The bundle had food in it. I could see that it was small. Not enough for the boy's own family to share generously, let alone for 5,000. I went to the boy, I asked him about the food. I cannot now remember exactly what I said. It was something simple, I imagine, something that did not frighten him. And then I brought him to Jesus, and I said the thing that I knew, even as I said it, sounded absurd.
Andrew, what is it?
Master, there is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?
My question reflected a twinge of doubt, of uncertainty.
Even I did not know the answer to that question. I was not bringing a solution. I was bringing what I had found, which was a child with a small lunch, and I was trusting that the finding and bringing was the right thing to do, even when I could not see what happened next. What happened next was 12 baskets of leftovers. I have thought about the boy many times since. I do not know his name. He is not named in any account. He was there, and then he went home, presumably back to whatever family had packed his lunch that morning with no idea that it would be the material of something extraordinary. He was the kind of person I was always looking for. The one nobody noticed. The one with something to contribute that looked, from the outside, like not enough. It never is not enough when it is placed in the right hands. It happened during the last week, during the Passover, before the crucifixion, when the city was full of pilgrims. Some Greeks had come to worship at the feast. Not Jews, Greeks, Gentiles, people for whom the temple was a place of fascination and partial access rather than full belonging. They approached Philip. Philip, being Philip, was not quite sure what to do with them. So Philip came to me. I love this about Philip. He is a careful thinker, Philip, and when something falls outside his existing categories, he does not pretend otherwise. He comes and finds the person he trusts to know what to do next.
Andrew, there are some Greeks who want to see Jesus. What should we tell them?
I did not need to deliberate long. They wanted to see Jesus. That was, in my experience, always sufficient reason to bring someone to Jesus. We went together, Philip and I, and we told Jesus, and what he said in response was one of the most surprising things I heard him say in 3 years of surprising statements. He did not say yes or no to the Greeks directly. He said, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." He said, "Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." I have spent a long time with those words. He was telling us something about what kind of glory was coming. Not the triumphant entry kind, not the feeding of thousands kind, the dying into fruitfulness kind. The grain of wheat that has to go into the ground before anything can grow. And he connected it, at least in my mind, at least in the moment, to the Greek standing at the door asking to see him. As if their arrival was itself a sign. The hour had come because now even the Gentiles were looking for him, and the only way to reach them and everyone beyond them was through what was coming. I brought a Galilean fisherman to the Messiah on the first evening. I brought a boy with a small lunch to someone who could do something with it. I brought Greeks to the door of the man who was about to become, through his death, available to the whole world. I did not know that was the pattern when I started. I see it clearly now.
Andrew's story reminds us that the kingdom of God often turns on things that seem too small to matter. A younger brother who goes looking for Simon. A boy with a poor family's lunch. A few Greeks standing at the edge of belonging, asking only to see Jesus. None of these moments looked important enough to change history. But Andrew noticed them. There is something freeing in that. We are not responsible for multiplying the loaves. We are not responsible for transforming the person we invite, fixing the problem we uncover, or knowing in advance what God will do with what we place before him. Andrew did not bring Jesus a solution to the hunger of thousands. He brought him 5 loaves, 2 fish, and a boy. He did not know how Gentiles would fit into God's unfolding plan. He simply knew that people who wanted to see Jesus should be brought to him. Perhaps faithfulness is often that simple. Pay attention, bring what you find, and step back. Notice the person others overlook. Offer the gift that seems insufficient. Open the door for someone who is standing outside it. We may never know what rests on the other side of that small act. The hinge is rarely noticed once the door has opened. But God's kingdom is full of doors that opened because someone like Andrew was willing to become the hinge, to be continued.